pleasure to be back here. And in terms of the Seder, so I thought we would talk a little bit about one mitzvah which is different in a sense from the other mitzvahs of the Seder. Many of the mitzvahs that we do are rooted in the Torah, and even if, regarding the Seder, and even if nowadays they may or may not be ben HaTorah, like the Maror, for example, but they are still rooted in the Torah itself and its description of Leil Pesach. But one notable exception that has a major presence at the Seder is the four cups of wine, the mitzvah of the Dalet Kosos. That seems to be purely a din d'rabbanan, purely a rabbinic rule. And this is part of a category that we have of the mitzvos of Pirsumei Nisa, which puts it in a group together with Kriyas HaMegillah and the Chanukah candles. These are generally understood as the mitzvos of Pirsumei Nisa, of publicizing a miracle. And when it comes to the four kosos, it seems that this is contrasted then with the other mitzvos of the Seder, that this is a purely rabbinic idea. However, the Yerushalmi suggests that there are perhaps places to look in the Torah for inspiration regarding the Dalet Kosos, and the most well-known, even though the Gemara has a few possibilities, but the most well-known association of the Dalet Kosos are the four Lashonos of Geula, the expressions that we find in the beginning of Parshas Ve'era, where we are told, V'hotzesi, V'hitzalti, V'ga'alti, V'lakachti, that God says He will redeem the Jews with four different languages, four different expressions of redemption. And these four Lashonos of Geula, the Yerushalmi suggests that these are the inspiration for the four cups of wine. And that helps us to try to conceptualize, to try to understand what exactly is the structure, and together with that, what's the nature of this mitzvah of Dalet Kosos? There actually are at least two ways to understand what's going on. And this is a question that the Achronim raised, among them perhaps most notably the Brisker Rav, the Velvel Soloveitchik, will formulate it a little bit differently, but in a similar way, he posed the question of how do we understand the nature of this mitzvah. What exactly are Chazal asking us to do when it comes to the Dalet Kosos? So on the one hand, we could say that it's a mitzvah to drink. And why do we have four? So we have four because, like we just said, there are four Lashonos of Geula. So there's a symbolism of four that is associated with the Seder. And if that's the case, so the Mordechai raises the question that perhaps it didn't have to be four cups of wine. It could have been four pieces of meat. I'll tell you personally, I probably would have preferred that. I'm not much of a drinker. But apparently there's a specific issue of wine. Some understand that maybe it's because it creates a elevated spirit, and maybe there's a imagery there. Ramban discusses that the four Lashonos of Geula are not just synonyms, they're different phases of Geula. We're moving from one phase to the next. So therefore, perhaps if wine does have that effect on people, so that's the idea. So we want to drink, that's the idea. Maybe this symbolizes cheres and elevation of some sort. And therefore, we should do it times four because of the four Lashonos of Geula. So that's one way to conceptualize what's going on. Chazal said we should drink Pesach night, and four because of the four Lashonos. There is another way to understand it, which on the surface is completely different. And that has to do with the fact that we could find four somewhere else during the Seder, and that is that there are at least four, you can count things different ways, but let's assume there are four mitzvos of the Seder that are focused around speech, that are verbal, and brachos and the like. And when it comes to brachos, so we know that we often prefer to make a bracha al hakos. We prefer to have something associated with the bracha, perhaps to give it a little bit more chashivas, something that's just speech, is not necessarily recognized as an action. It's something that seems ephemeral. So if we connect it with a kos, it gives it a little bit more of a permanence and a little bit more chashivas. So maybe that's the idea. So what would these four mitzvos be? So Pesach night, we have to make kiddush. We have a mitzvah of Haggadah, we have a mitzvah of Berchas HaMazon, and we have a mitzvah of Hallel. And perhaps the idea was that Chazal ordained that we should make all of these four recitations al-Hakos. And in this case, they did so with particular emphasis. So maybe, for example, when it comes to benching, so all year round, there's a preference to bench al hakos, but we don't necessarily always make sure to do that. But perhaps when it comes to Pesach night, so Chazal said, it's not optional. So tonight, you bench al hakos. Tonight, everything will be done al hakos. And perhaps, in order to emphasize the theme there also, we could point to a Gemara in Besachas Brachos, where the Gemara talks about the history of Havdalah al Hakos. The Gemara talks about the fact there were ups and downs here, that the mitzvah, the Rabbanan presumably of Hallel, was instituted al Hakos, but then for a while the Jews had a hard time being able to afford wine, so then Chazal said, it's okay, we'll just have it recited in Shemona Esrei, we'll say Atta Chanatano, we won't require a kos. And then Chazru v'Heshiru, when the Jews got a little bit back on their feet and they were more financially stable, so then we went back to making Havdalah al-Hakos. So that seems to suggest that there's an association between making a bracha al-Hakos and being in a good place, being financially secure, let's say, being a little bit more royal. So perhaps Chazal said, okay, all year round, you make a bracha al-Hakos, you don't, it's not necessarily the biggest deal. But Pesach night, we're going to insist, benching should be al-Hakos, all of these brachos should be al-Hakos, and that's how we came up with the idea of four kosos. So it's really two different models, essentially. It's not just a question of where the number comes from, but it affects the tzura of the mitzvah, because the first one is saying that there's a mitzvah to drink. So that's really what the mitzvah is, to drink times four. While the second model is not really about drinking. It's about brachos. It's a question of how you make the brachos. So there's a mitzvah to recite these four recitations over the course of the Seder, and each time the mitzvah is enhanced by being recited al hakos. So far, so good? Makes sense? So with that, there are probably a few ramifications, some of which, again, the Brisker Rav talks about in his Sefer on the Rambam, some of which you could pull from other discussions, but just to consider a few examples of where it might make a difference. So there may be a machlokas, depending on how you read it, about the following question. So let's say you have somebody who doesn't like drinking so much. Again, I'm not such a fan of drinking personally. Or maybe you can't afford that much wine. That also could happen. Or various other reasons why you don't necessarily want to drink dalek kosos yourself. Is there a possibility of shomei ka'oneh? Could you have, say, one person recite the brachos al hakos, like we have by Kiddush Friday night, for example? Could you use that model for the dalek kosos? So it could be that this is a machlokas Tosfos in the Rambam, because Tosfos in the beginning of the fourth Karak of Psachim does seem to raise such a possibility that maybe that might work, that just like we have Friday night with Kiddush, where maybe people at the table taste from the wine, but we're not necessarily insistent on that, and you can fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush without anyone tasting from the wine. If the balabas, if the head of the household recites Kiddush and everyone else listens, so then they'll all be in fulfillment of Kiddush, whether or not they drink from the wine. So maybe dalek kosos could work the same way. So Tosfos at least entertains that possibility. Whether or not that's the maskana, whether that's the conclusion, a little bit of a question, but Tosfos at least seems to entertain that possibility. And from the Rambam, there's no such indication that that's a possibility. And it sounds like from the Rambam that there's no such thing, and that everyone is expected, men and women, this is a mitzvah that applies equally to men and women, because we have the rule of Afen Hayu Ba'oso Haneis, so there's no distinction on that front. And everyone at the table should drink their own set of dalek kosos. So what's the question based on? What would this dispute be about? So it seems to correlate to the issue of what is the mitzvah about? What exactly are we doing? That if indeed we're talking about a recitation al hakos, so then perhaps, yes, it may be comparable to Kiddush. And when it comes to Kiddush, so we have this notion of a recitation al hakos, but we don't insist that everyone drink their own kos. It's just a question of what the mevarech is doing. So maybe the Seder could work the same way. So let the head of the Seder recite all the brachos al hakos, and everyone else will be present, and they'll fulfill the mitzvah that way. While if we were to say that it's a mitzvah of drinking, so then the concept of Shemei Ka'ona doesn't really make sense. It's as if we were to say that when it comes to the mitzvah of matzah, so you could either eat the matzah or you could listen to the crunch of the guy next to you. It's not really a concept that applies. The concept of Shemei Ka'ona clearly only fits for something that is speech-oriented or somewhere in that category. So when it comes to matzah, no one ever brought up the possibility of Shemei Ka'ona. So too, if it's a mitzvah of drinking, Shemei Ka'ona wouldn't really be a logical possibility. So perhaps that's the machlokis that we have, if there is such a machlokis between Tosfos and the Rambam. I say if there is such a machlokis, because again, it's not really clear that this is what Tosfos really feels is actually a viable plan. It's interesting, I believe the Tshuvas, this Oris Tshuva notes, that it could be that Tosfos is really making a different point. That the Mishnah, the first Mishnah in the 10th parak of Psachim, has quite a chumrah when it comes to the Dalakosos. And this may be the model for other mitzvahs. So, for example, when it comes to Neris Chanukah, so the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch write that we have a tremendous chavivus, is the language they use, we have a tremendous affection for the mitzvah of Chanukah, and we're very machmir about it, so that even somebody who has a hard time affording candles and has to struggle, has to beg, has to be sholah psachim, has to go ask for tzedakah, nonetheless is obligated to do so in order to be able to afford Neris Chanukah. So it's not clear where that comes from. So why should that be? Normally we have limitations on how much one is expected to spend on mitzvos, even a mitzvah min haTorah. If a person can't afford tefillin, it's an important mitzvah min haTorah, so we assume there's a limit to how much one is expected to spend. And yet, when it comes to this mitzvah, the Rabbanan of Neris Chanukah, was telling us that we have to go to such lengths, even if we don't have the money at all, we have to go begging and asking for whatever help we can get in order to fulfill this mitzvah. So apparently so. And the Magid Mishnah on the side of the Rambam says, how do you know? Because that's the halacha when it comes to Dalet Kosos. The Mishnah in Psachim says that afilu ani hashol afilu ani ha mispanish min atzibur halakech min atamchay. So afilu ani halakech min atamchay lo yifchos lo midalet kosos shol yayin. He should not even somebody who's already taking from tzedakah, taking from the communal funds, should not take less than what he needs for 4 cups of wine. And this is the basis for the story they teach you in rabbi school about the Beis Halevi. Probably familiar with the story, then it's related that a woman came to the Beis Halevi before Pesach, and she said that she can't afford wine for the Dalet Kosos, so she wanted to know, could she use milk instead? Which sounds very strange to confuse milk with wine. It's actually not as strange as it sounds, because the Gemara says that there is somewhat of a correlation, because milk makes you drowsy. It's a little bit like being intoxicated. So maybe there was a hapamina, you could have milk instead of wine. So the Beis Halevi said to her, no, you have to use wine, and the Mishnah says that you have to take from tzedakah, even if necessary, to have the Dalet Kosos. So I'll help you. I'll pay for your Dalet Kosos. And he reached into his wallet and he took out money that was clearly a lot more than the cost of wine. So the students noticed this. They said, we saw how much you gave her. It's a lot more than wine's going to cost. How come you gave her so much? So he said to his students, he says, you have to pay closer attention. If she's asking me that she wants to use milk for the Dalet Kosos, so you can see that it's not just wine that she's missing. Right? What else is she missing? Right? Apparently she can't afford meat either, because she's planning on having a milchik seder. She's going to have milk at the seder, so apparently she not only is unable to afford wine, she's unable to afford the meat as well. So they teach you this in rabbi school, that you have to be able to be sensitive to the question behind the question. Don't only listen to the question that's actually being asked, but you have to also realize what's not being asked. So here she's asking about using milk. So you see it's not just a lack of wine, it's a lack of meat as well. So the Beis Halevi realized that, and he paid for the whole deal. So all of this comes from this din in the Mishnah, that there's a chumrah of Pishumei Nisa, and that chumrah apparently requires you to go above and beyond, and that's what it sounds like from this din regarding the Dalet Kosos. So it could be that when Tosfos brought up the possibility of Shemei Ka'ona, the Tosfos probably didn't think that the whole mitzvah of Dalet Kosos really could be fulfilled through Shomei Ka'ona, and should you just prefer to do it that way, the same way you might prefer on a regular Friday night, that would be equally good. It's possible that what Tosfos meant was it was referring specifically to that din, that the Mishnah was saying that you have to go to such lengths in order to fulfill this mitzvah more than you would normally be expected to because of this chumrah of presuming nisa. So Tosfos was saying, well, if there's this added pressure, this added chumrah, and it's there because you need to make sure that you publicize the miracle, so maybe one set per household is also enough. And maybe if you had one set per household, that would take the edge off. That would knock it down to a normal mitzvah. So the presuming nisa would be fulfilled because everyone at the table would have a dalakosos there. So that extra chumrah wouldn't necessarily be there. So then it would go down to a normal din. A normal din, if you can't afford it, so then we'll find a kula. But maybe Tosfos didn't really mean to say that the whole mitzvah could be fulfilled through Shamei Kona. So whether there's really a machlokas about this is a machlokas about the machlokas. But on the quest surface, this question of whether it makes sense at all to talk about Shamei Kona in reference to the Dalet Kosos, maybe that's connected to this question about what the concept of Dalet Kosos really is. It also affects the question, which is also relevant to those of us who don't necessarily love drinking, of just how much is the shir? How much is one expected to drink of each of the dalet kosos? And this was a machlokas rishonim, and a number of the rishonim thought that it was defined by revius, by a certain measurement of liquid, and that we apply to it rubo kakulo. We apply to it the idea that the majority of the amount counts as the whole amount, and then the different formulations in the Rishonim, whether it means rov kos, so how you have to have a kos that holds at least a revius, and then most of the cup, or most of a revius, but many understood that it's defined by that, which is the liquid version of a kezias, the basic shear of drinking, that's the basic shear of eating, while Tosfos actually had the opinion that it's a melo lugmav, that it's a cheekful, which is the same kind of shear that we have when it comes to tasting from the Kiddush wine. So it could be that that also reflects the same kind of question, that are we looking at this as a mitzvah of drinking? So just like when it comes to matzah, you have a kezias, so then the liquid version, we have a revius, there's a parallel on the front. Or maybe we're looking at it like Kiddush, that really the mitzvah is not about drinking, it's really about the bracha, but once we make the bracha, so then there is a halacha to taste from the cup, so the lulugmav is a way of tasting, and maybe it follows that pattern, maybe it's also correlated to Kiddush. So far, so good? Makes sense?
Well, it was a smaller amount.
Would seem like it, yeah. It's actually one of the only shear that we have that is subjective based on the individual. You know, every other shear is measured based on the item, and here this is going to differ based on a bigger cheek or a smaller cheek. So it's an unusual kind of shear. So there are a number of other both conceptual and practical questions that come up. One of the issues that's relevant specifically when you have the Seder Friday night, so this is an interesting question from a lumdisha perspective and a practical perspective. It could be very interesting because it ties into a lot of interesting lumdisha questions, but also could have major practical ramifications. So let's say, what's the halacha? This part could apply any year, whether it's Friday night or not, but what's the halacha if somebody is benching during the Seder and he forgets to say Yalav Yavav? So what's the din? So the rule normally is, the Gemara tells us that regarding Yalav Yavav, that if one forgets to say that during benching, whether or not one has to repeat the benching, it depends on the nature of the meal. That if the meal is obligatory, so let's say it's a Yontif meal or a Shabbos meal, so then one is obligated to repeat, let's say in the case of Shabbos or Yalav Yavav. But if it's a meal that's not technically obligatory, but it's a good idea, like let's say Chol HaMoed or Rosh Chodesh, so then you're supposed to say Yalav Yavav, but if you don't, so then we don't make you go back. So being that the Seder night certainly is perhaps the most obligatory Yontif meal that we have Yontif together with the mitzvah of matzah, so it's certainly a obligatory meal. So the halacha would be that one is obligated to say Yalav Yavav, and if he forgets to say Yalav Yavav, to repeat the benching. So there's a question the poskim dealt with. So what would happen if that happens? So now you're benching again. So do you have to have another kos? Or should we say that no, you had the kos together with the first benching. So there's no reason to do it again. So that would seem to correlate to this issue, that if you understand that the notion is a bracha al hakos, So then perhaps, yes, you'd have to have another one because now you're benching again, so the benching has to be al hakos. But if the idea is it's about four kosos and they're just placed strategically throughout the Seder, so then you already accomplished that the first time, so just because you're repeating benching wouldn't necessarily be a reason to have an extra kos. So things could get even more interesting, that if one decided to, let's say, be machmir on this question, so it also actually connects to another question. The question could be not just about the nature of dalakosos, it could be about the nature of repeating benching when you forget yalaviyavo. Because that's a chakir in of itself, that's a question of its own. What exactly is the reason that we ask you to bench again if you forget yalaviyavo? Is it because benching on Shabbos or Yontif is nothing without the reference to Shabbos or Yontif, so it's as if you didn't bench at all, so we require you to repeat it? Or should we say, no, it's not nothing, it's the exact same benching that you do every other day of the year, and it's fully valid then, so it doesn't make sense to say that it's no benching at all. But just perhaps there is such a importance upon reciting Ritzei or Yalaviyavo that even though the first benching was good, you still have to bench a second time in order to fulfill that. So the question could also come from that angle. Because it could be that maybe, yes, you need to bench al hakos, but you did bench al hakos the first time, you just have to do it again in order to put in the Yalaviyavo. So there's two different angles to come at it from. It could be a question of how to relate to dalakosos. It could be a question of how to relate to benching. So where it gets really labor-dick is, let's say it is Friday night Seder, and you forget to say Ritzei. So then you're going to have to repeat because of Ritzei. So let's say you bench a second time, and you remember to say Ritzei, but you forgot to say Yalaviyavo. So then you have to bench a third time. So that relates to that second question, because if you understand that a benching without Yalaviyavo on Yontif is nothing, and in this case it's Shabbos and Yontif, so without either one it's nothing, so then maybe you have to bench a third time, because either one fit the bill. You didn't have it say the first time, you didn't have Yalaviyavo the second time, so maybe you're going to have to bench the third time. But if you understand that, no, the benching was valid, it's just you need to get this recitation in, so then maybe you could have one with Ritzei and one with the Yalaviyavo. Clearly not ideal, but maybe that would work. So this is a question that kind of builds on itself, because in addition to all the layers of lumdus that have to intersect here, but if one was going to be machmir on this, so then you're going to have a new kos each time, so then each time you're going to be progressively more likely to forget, because you're going to get drunker as you keep going, and the lumdus is going to be harder and harder to keep track of. So therefore, for that reason, it's probably not kedai to be machmir, but it's an interesting question to consider, just exactly what are the various implications of following that through. Another more theoretical question, but just it illustrates a little bit what's at play here. So the Gemara says that if you drink the dalakosos bevas achas, so then that's not a fulfillment. If you drink them all in one shot. So it was a machlokas. Rashi and his grandson, the Rashbam, both on the page there in Sachin, it's a machlokas. What is that that's not good? What does it mean to have all the dalakosos in one shot that is disqualified? So according to Rashi, it means that you get one of those big novelty glasses that goes all the way up, and you fill it up all the way, you have it all in one cup. And the Rashbam says, no, that doesn't make sense, because I don't even know why that would be considered dalakosos at all. There's no upper limit to a kos. So just because you have four times the volume in one cup, there's no reason to even think that would be considered dalakosos. So that wouldn't even enter the conversation. So what does it mean to have it in one shot? So perhaps what it means is that instead of having it placed where it otherwise would be in the Seder, where it's meant to be associated with the different brachos, so you have it all together, 1, 2, 3, 4, not in accordance with the placement that it normally has in the Haggadah. So perhaps that also reflects two different ways to understand what the goal is. That maybe according to Rashi's initial formulation, the goal is to have four. So if you pour them all into one, you lose the four, so then that's the issue. That's called basachas. But according to the Rashbam, you have four either way, but the four specifically have to be associated with the mitzvot. So that's the whole point. So if they're not going to be connected to Kiddush and benching and Hallel and Haggadah, so then it's not going to accomplish what it's meant to, and that's what we mean when we say the basachas, that that's not good. There is also an interesting angle that the poskim talk about since we assume that there is a relationship between the dalakosos and cheirus, So how exactly does that impact what's going on? And that's not just an idea that the commentary suggested, but the Gemara brings this up because the Gemara talks about different ways in which one can try to mix and match here. So let's say somebody doesn't mix. Let's say the Gemara talks about Shasa and Chai. They used to mix the wine with water because the wine they had wasn't drinkable by itself. It wasn't pleasurably drinkable by itself. So the Gemara talks about what happens if you would drink wine that was undiluted. So the Gemara has that and a couple of other scenarios. And among the scenarios, the Gemara has a distinction. In one place, yidei kosos yatsa, yidei cheres lo yatsa, that it's possible to have the kosos without the symbolism of cheres. So what exactly is the impact of cheres? It's an interesting question. It has a couple of possible considerations. One was a topic of a machlokas that's relevant to a lot of people. I've mentioned it a few times. I'm not such a big drinker. So let's say somebody is not a fan of alcohol. So how does that impact one's relation to the Dalet Kosos? So here there was a machlokes by proxy, basically a machlokes and later svarim by the students of Rav Soloveitchik on the one hand and Rav Moshe Feinstein on the other hand. And it basically boils down to a mutually exclusive positions. There's no safe side, according to this machlokes, that Rav Moshe Feinstein was quoted by his son Rav David Feinstein in his Agada as maintaining that the Dalet Kosos have to be alcoholic, that they have to actually be at least potentially intoxicating, because that's what the idea of cheres is. While Rav Soloveitchik is quoted by Rav Shechter in the Nefesh HaRav as essentially saying the opposite, that because it's about cheres, so if somebody doesn't enjoy drinking and you're forcing him to drink dafka, so then that would be the opposite of cheres. So how exactly cheres impacts this is an interesting discussion. So it relates to the issue of whether one can have grape juice. You can't have milk, but maybe you could have grape juice instead of the Dalet Kosos. So this was essentially what they were arguing about. One could say that maybe the raya is from the Talmud Yerushalmi and the Shulchan Aruch, that one does have to have actual wine, because the Yerushalmi tells a story of one of the Amoraim who drank at the Seder and had a headache from Pesach to Shavuos, which is pretty extreme. So apparently he reacted to wine in such a negative way, and nonetheless he still had to do it anyway. And the Shulchan Aruch writes that even if he feels he's damaged by the wine, he still has to drink. So that seems to indicate that grape juice maybe isn't an option. However, as many point out, that in the time of the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch, grape juice wasn't available 12 months a year. So it wasn't something that was necessarily there as a possibility. But Bizman Hazeh, that we have availability of grape juice 12 months a year, so perhaps indeed, that is an option. And it's also brought in the name of the Chazon Ish and the Shulchan Aruch and other great Gedolim that not only did they allow for grape juice at the Seder, but they themselves did use grape juice at the Seder. So this was a machlokes. Should also emphasize that despite this language of Maziko and about the headache from Pesach to Shavuos, that the assumption there is that it's still a passing phenomenon, as intense as that sounds. But if somebody actually would suffer a real negative lasting impact from drinking alcohol, that's a different discussion. There's a lot to talk about. It's not our subject today, just to emphasize that's a more complicated issue. But again, there are many who certainly are makel to allow grape juice, even l'chachila, so just to note that. But that perhaps connects to this question of how do we interpret cheres. It's also relevant. We recently had a Shemitah year, so Yerushalmi has a suffix about whether one can use Shemitah wine for the Seder. So the question is, what's the question? Why should that be an issue? So Shemitah wine is kosher, you can drink it, so why should it be a problem to use it for the Seder?
You can ask everyone here the answer, because that was the topic of my Shabbos HaGadol drosha last year.
Okay.
It's almost a year, but it's not even yet a year, so I'm sure they remember everything I said.
Okay, so what's the answer? Can you use it? So yes, it is mutter, but the question is, what's the question? Why is it a suffix? And so the commentaries on the side of the Yerushalmi suggest that maybe there's a din of lachem when it comes to the Dalet Kosos. That we know this is really rooted in lulav and esrog. That when it comes to lulav and esrog, there's a halacha of ownership. That the Torah says, "Ulakachtem lachem," So you have to own the lulav and esrog. So it's a question how much that extends to other mitzvot. So when it comes to Pesach, it's a big discussion. If there's a din of lachem when it comes to matzah, do you have to own the matzah, which leads to all kinds of interesting chumras. You have guests at the Seder, so do you have to give them the matzah to make it their own before they eat it or not? That's a whole discussion, also not our topic. So the suggestion was that maybe you need lachem also when it comes to the dalakos, is what you spoke about. And so that maybe, even though you do own the Shemitah wine, but maybe if there's a restriction, because you can't just do whatever you want with it, so maybe that's something that subtracts from the notion of lachem. So that's one possibility, but Rav Nosson Gishtetner has in his Shuvas Laharis Nosson that he suggests that maybe it goes to the question of Cheres, that if you're not totally free to do whatever you want with it, you have any kind of a restriction, so you feel a little bit inhibited when it comes to the disinhibiting wine, so maybe that's not called Cheres, so that's the Havamin. Again, the conclusion is you still can, but the question is, why was it a question? Maybe it has to do with that. Okay, so far so good? Everybody with me? A few more minutes? That was the Havamina. It's actually two separate considerations. That the Nosei Kalim there was saying it's a din lachem, and what the Laharis Nosson was suggesting is maybe it doesn't have to do with lachem, but maybe because wine has to do with cheres, or the dalakoso specifically has to do with cheres, so maybe that's the idea. So just to say one or two more points, and we'll keep you too long, because that definitely won't be a din in cheres, and that will undermine the whole concept. So I'll set you free in a moment. But there is a question here, the way we've looked at it, that we're basically seeing two different possibilities. That either we're conceptualizing the mitzvah as a mitzvah of drinking, and then that has one set of understanding, or we're looking at it as something associated with the mitzvos, and that's where it comes from. The four mitzvos of the night have four themes of associating it with the dalakosos. But it could be that they're not necessarily completely distinct. And there is an interesting suggestion in the Meshachach of Meir Simcha in his Sefer Al Torah, Yor Samech in his Sefer on Chumash, in Parshas Va'era. So he has a suggestion there that kind of bridges these two possibilities. But I'm not going to say it over fully because it's a little complicated, but it's a Mar Mokum. You can take a look at the Meshach Achwa. It's also part of what makes it complicated is that he counts the four mitzvos differently. He has it as Kiddush and Hallel and the other half of Hallel and Benching. He counts Hallel as two. So I'm not going to try to do justice to his presentation, but just to tell you the gist of it, he suggests that the mitzvos and the four Lashonos of Geula are really meant to parallel each other. So in that sense, he says, in every case, as we noted, the four Lashonos are not just synonyms, they have different themes that all connect to Geula. And in each case, he says, one of the mitzvos is there to parallel that theme. And it's meant to show that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is redeeming us, and we have to meet Him halfway. So we have to do an act of self-redemption, essentially, together with that, in order to complement HaKadosh Baruch Hu's redemption. So, for example, the first one is V'Hotzeisi. So we want God to take us out, so we have to separate ourselves. So the notion of Kiddush, of sanctification, is the parallel that just as we ask God to take us out from that environment, so we also have to sanctify ourselves. And Kiddush comes to parallel that first lashon of Geula. So too, when it comes to Hitzalti, that we want God to save us from those who would hurt us, so interesting the way it comes to these conclusions, so we have to make sure we're not going to hurt each other. Why would we hurt each other? Because sometimes we have a scarcity mentality. We feel there's not enough to go around, and so we're all in competition with each other, so we're fighting. So the theme of benching is that we know there is no scarcity, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of us. So we recognize that when we have a sense of being provided for, so we're not going to go after each other. We're not going to have that scarcity mentality. So in each one, he has this notion that there is a joint effort, that there is a theme of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's redemption, and that we correspond to that with a gesture of redeeming ourselves. So if we have that understanding, so then perhaps we could also consider another issue that the Gemara brings up, and that is that there may be a fifth kos. So for those who don't like drinking, that's disappointing. Those who do, so then it's perhaps something to look forward to. So the Gemara talks about a fifth kos as a possibility, and it's a question whether that's the same concept as we have as a kos shel olio. It may be a different thing, it may be the same thing. Rav Kasher, the editor of the Torah Shlema, has a long article, which you can find online somewhere, talking about what exactly this fifth kos is. But what comes out from the Gemara is that the fifth kos is essentially optional. So where would a fifth kos come from? That if we're following the idea of the four lashonos of Geula, so we need a fifth lashon in order to provide for a fifth cup. So where does the fifth cup come from? So the Ravid suggests that if you look two psukim later, so you can find another verb of the hevesi. So maybe v'hotzalti v'itzalti v'galti v'lakachti v'hevesi. So maybe that's the fifth verb that can justify a fifth cup. But if you look in the Netziv, in his commentary, in Chumash Deren Va'era, so he has a different suggestion for what the fifth verb is, and it's actually earlier, it's before Vehevesi, it's between the first four Lashonos and Vehevesi, and the language that he points to is V'yidatem Ki'ani Hashem Elokeichem, that you should know that I am the God who took you out of Mitzrayim. So that's the verb that would connect to a fifth kos. So that's particularly interesting in light of the Meshech Chachma's understanding, because this verb is not focusing on what God does, it's focusing on what we do. That we should come to know, we should come to understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who took us out of Mitzrayim. So perhaps within this kind of framework we can relate to what's going on, that there is a process here, especially as we go from one coast to the other, that we are describing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's redemption of us, and that the Kosos ask us to also recognize our obligation to meet him halfway and to act to redeem ourselves. And if we are focused on that process and we actually are carrying out each step as we are asked to do, so then the result is that it comes to something that we do, that we come to recognize. We will know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has redeemed us. But that is an accomplishment. So perhaps that's why the idea is that that's the optional kos, because Lav Kol Adam Zocheh, maybe not everyone necessarily has the focus to reach that level. But the message here is that if one has the awareness and the appreciation of what the Dalet Kosos is trying to accomplish, so then perhaps, yes, we will reach that level of Yidatem, that we will do our part in appreciating both the redemption itself and contributing to the redemption through bringing ourselves to that stage. And we'll just close by noting that this theme of Persumei Nisa and the idea that Chazal asked us to go to such great lengths, Rav Shechter often quotes from Rav Soloveitchik that the reason that Chazal put such chumrah on Persumei Nisa is because what Persumei Nisa really is a type of tefillah, that it's a way of saying, God, we appreciate the fact that you've done miracles for us in the past, and we want more miracles. So if we're asking that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, should go kviyachol outside of his budget, that normally he rules the world al pi derech hateva, and a miracle means he goes outside that planned budget. So it's a little incongruous for us to say that we're asking God to go above and beyond, and in order to send that message, we've allotted exactly 19.9% of our budget and not 1 cent over. It's a little bit of an incongruous message. So if we are asking for more miracles, so then we also have to push and show that we're ready to go above and beyond what's normally expected of us. So that theme, that Persumei Nisa is itself a tefillah for future salvation and for additional miracles, is a powerful theme, and especially now we know that Eretz Yisrael has had a very rough time, the world's had a rough time, there's a lot of sakana that's out there, there's a lot that's threatening us, and there's a lot that particularly here has been a source of pain and threat. And Baruch Hashem, through connecting fully to the theme of Persumei Nisa, of the Dalet Kosos, and to the recognition that that sends a message to us what we are required to do in order to fully appreciate and to internalize the Kadosh Baruch Hu's miracles, so that we should merit more and additional protection and salvation in the future. It should indeed be the merit of all of us and all of Kal Yisrael that our Chag HaGeula shall bring about a complete Geula and complete salvation for all of Kal Yisrael.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you, Rabbi Feldman. We have a Cohen who what?